The January 5th double suicide bombing at the central bus station in Tel Aviv resulted in at least 23 deaths and over 100 injured, many very seriously. Those hit hardest by the recent bombings were Tel Aviv's undocumented workers, many of whom fled the bombing site, refusing to be treated for injuries due to fear of consequences from the Israeli government over discovering their undocumented status. The bombing points to Israel's occupation and the growing desperation of Palestinians living under occupation on a daily basis, such as those in the city of Nablus, living under Israeli curfew, simply being punished for being Palestinian. We spoke with Montreal-based writer and activist Jaggi Singh on the ground in Israel about the recent suicide bombing in Tel Aviv.
The whole logic of suicide bombings and the occupation is pretty clear. Suicide bombings are a response to the collective punishment that the occupation imposes on civilian Palestinians all the time. It's a predictable response to what's happening in the occupied territories. Over the last week only, between December 26th and January 1st, there were 15 civilian Palestinians who were killed by Israeli occupation forces. Between the last suicide bombing and the current suicide bombing, there were more than 50 civilian Palestinians killed by the Israeli occupation forces in the territories. So a response by people in desperate situations is to engage in these attacks. And of course, the Israeli occupation forces' response will be a tighter clampdown. They've already declared that there will be no movement by Palestinians between Palestinian cities, which is a pretty extreme measure. The Palestinian Authority is claiming that all Palestinian men of the age of 35 will not be allowed to leave the territories at all. They've closed three universities. They're going to be imposing more curfews, more incursions, more operations, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, nobody believes for a second that this is going to stop the next suicide bombing. Actually, it's going to help create a new batch of people who are so desperate that they're willing to engage in the deaths of other civilians. What my article was trying to do was sort of talk about some of the complexities about the current suicide bombing, because it did take place, as you mentioned, in a major immigrant district of Tel Aviv. When I say immigrant, I don't mean Jewish immigrants, because all of Israel is made up of Jewish immigrants, but rather foreign workers, people from Eastern Europe, from Africa, from Southeast Asia, mainly the Philippines and Thailand, from Latin America, often also from India and elsewhere, who come here to work. Israel has approximately 300,000 foreign workers who are here both illegally and legally. And what the suicide bombing has done is allowed for a little bit of the complexity of Israeli society to come out, because the foreign workers, the economy here is dependent on these foreign workers who are predominantly involved in the cleaning trades, construction, agriculture, service area. In other words, the so-called, and I say so-called, shit jobs that average people in rich societies like Israel or Canada or the U.S. or Western Europe or Australia and New Zealand don't do, and they bring in foreigners. Of course, these foreigners have been scapegoated for the past year and longer. They've been blamed for unemployment. They've been blamed by ultra-Orthodox politicians for disrupting the Jewish character of the state. And there's actually been roundups and dragnets to deport these foreigners. So they live in a state of fear. And with the recent attack, Israeli society has, you know, learned once again, like, what their society is made up of. You know, a good proportion of it are foreigners who don't identify with being Jewish or Arab. But it's also exposed some hypocrisy, because on the one hand, the interior minister and the foreign minister are making public statements about how any foreigners who were injured will get fair treatment and they won't be deported. They had to say that because a lot of the foreigners refuse to get medical treatment because they're afraid of being deported. That gives you an idea of how much they live in fear. While they're saying that, after suicide bombing, after these foreigners have proved themselves, so to speak, as victims, like other Israelis are victims of so-called Palestinian terror, at the same time, these roundups are continuing and these deportations are continuing and the scapegoating is continuing. And it really shows, I think, one clear point, which is that Israel has a neo-colonial relationship with the Third World exactly like Canada and Australia and the U.S. and Western Europe does. It exploits that labor in much the same way that those countries do, and it scapegoats them in much the same way those countries do. The added complexity, of course, is that Israel has a direct colonial relationship with Palestinian people, who up until 2-3 years ago were the predominant source of cheap labor here, because of the Intifada, they've had to look elsewhere for their foreign labor. So, you know, this suicide bombing has allowed a lot of that information to get out.
Can we look at the idea of a period of calm? Often suicide bombings occur, quote-unquote, Palestinian terror attacks go down, and they're put within this context. Israeli officials state that this is an end to a period of calm. However, as you mentioned, in the past weeks, the civilian deaths that have occurred in the occupied territories, the Palestinian deaths, have been high in numbers. So can you talk about this idea of a period of calm and how that relates to suicide bombings and these phrases, how they're used in the corporate media to kind of illustrate the situation in terms of justifying Israel's responses?
Well, that's a really good question, because that whole phrase, a period of calm, is a racist double standard. In the Israeli papers up until the recent suicide bombing, and in mainstream papers, people were talking about the period of calm and how Sharon was very popular because since mid-November, there hasn't been a suicide attack. Well, of course, during that period of calm, as you allude to, there were civilian deaths of Palestinians, over 50, according to human rights monitors here. So when Palestinians are dying slowly and when they're being deported slowly and when their communities are being suffocated slowly and when they're prevented from going to school and have to live under curfew, et cetera, and when people are dying not necessarily at the hands of IOF bullets, but because they can't access hospitals or they can't access proper medical care, that's called a period of calm. And when a suicide attack goes off in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem, suddenly the period of calm is over. Well, it's, of course, as I said, it's a racist double standard. If there's going to be a real period of calm, those deaths of Palestinian civilians, the iron hand of the occupation needs to end. So that's the reality. That's the double standard that gets exposed here. And of course, for Palestinians, this is no period of calm. I was in Balata, in Nablus, in Beit Sahur, in Dehesha, in the occupied territories during the so-called period of calm. And for Palestinians, it wasn't a period of calm. It meant funerals. It meant curfew. It meant dealing with incursions. It meant dealing with home invasions and occupations of their homes. It meant dealing with home demolitions. It meant dealing with young people who are getting more and more upset and basically have an equation in their heads, which is in the first Intifada, approximately, and these are very approximate figures, approximately 300 Palestinians died for every one Israeli. In the current Intifada, in their mind, the ratio is lower. It's much lower because these suicide attacks take out a lot of Israeli civilians, murder Israeli civilians. And for them, that's the equation that matters. And that equation is going to continue to matter to them as long as these civilian deaths occur and as long as people continue to live in indignity and in humiliation as a result of the occupation.
Now let's look again at the response of the Israeli government to the recent suicide bombing. The current foreign minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is planning visits to the foreign workers who were injured in the recent attack who are now in hospital. So as you mentioned before, over the last years, undocumented workers in Israel, as they are here in Canada, have been criminalized, scapegoated. That's the reality. So can you speak about that? Benjamin Netanyahu is now making the time and the place to visit these foreign workers who were injured because of Israel's policies. So how is that playing out?
Well, you can say what you want about Benjamin Netanyahu, but one thing is he's no idiot. And he knows it's good PR because it shows humanity especially to the rest of the world, to visit people and to say that, you know, even these foreign workers are the same flesh as our flesh. And to use that as sort of a united front against the Palestinians. Of course, it was Benjamin Netanyahu, when he was prime minister back in the late 1990s and early 2000, who brought in the expulsion policy against foreign workers. That was continued under Ehud Barak, and it's continued under the current government of Ariel Sharon, in which Benjamin Netanyahu is the foreign minister. So it's PR. On the one hand, you show a human face. You show sympathy for people who are victims of terror. On the other hand, the Interior Ministry and the Labor Ministry, along with the police, are engaging in roundups of foreign so-called undocumented workers in the streets of Tel Aviv. So that's one point to make. The other point to make is, you know, what do foreign workers think about the whole situation here? A lot of them are actually pretty devout Christians, which is why they're willing to come to Israel to work, because they feel like it's holy land and you know, it's not such a bad thing to work here. reading some of the, I haven't been able to go to Tel Aviv and to investigate for myself, but reading news reports in the English Israeli papers, it's quite clear that people here are either neutral or rather sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. But neutrality, I think, would be the clear thing here. So, you know, Netanyahu's strategy is perhaps to sort of show the world that, look, everyone's united against Palestinians who are the world's pariah. In reality, foreign workers sort of understand, like many Israelis do, that these attacks are part of the equation of the occupation. And as long as the occupation continues, these attacks become more and more likely.
Can you speak about any reports that you have gotten about Israel's incursions into Palestinian territories in response to this attack, the shutting down of Palestinian universities? Can you speak about the response? What have people been telling you? What have you seen on the ground there?
I arrived in Jerusalem from Nablus literally hours before the suicide bombing. So I just got out before this clampdown began, but I have maintained telephone contact with people in Nablus and elsewhere. Tanks are again roaming the streets of Nablus. Three Palestinian universities have been shut down, including Al Najah University in Nablus. They've been called centers of terror, these universities. That includes Beer Zeit University, by the way. You know, when you start calling Palestinian universities centers of terror, you begin to understand what this occupation is about. That is, Palestinians are being punished because they're Palestinian, period. Because the entire scope of society is seen as a potential threat, including universities, including schools, et cetera, et cetera. In Nablus itself, there have been incursions during the night. Curfew is being imposed more aggressively. People are being prevented from leaving the city. I'm talking about Palestinians. And there are reports that anybody who is 35 or younger will not be allowed to leave. I talked to people in Beit Sohor as well, and they say it's relatively calm, but they expect curfew to be clamped down on there in the next few days. Keep in mind that you'd think that maybe they'd clamp down on curfew everywhere, but there's a manpower problem. Occupation is a tremendous expenditure of resources, of manpower, and it's difficult to maintain it. They need to call up more reservists if they really want to take over. I guess the final point I want to make about it is that there's now speculation about how much further the Israeli government is willing to go, because they've gone quite far. You know, they basically have reoccupied the territories. The next step is something called transfer, the forced expulsion of Palestinians to another country. And the Jerusalem Post openly speculates about that in a recent editorial, today's editorial actually, and says that perhaps it can't go that far for moral and diplomatic considerations. If it wasn't for those moral and diplomatic considerations, you would have the clear-cut, very tangible ethnic cleansing of Palestinians instead of the sort of more slow, indirect ethnic cleansing that we're observing right now. Those are some comments and observations that come to mind now 2 days after the recent attack in Tel Aviv.
Just one final question.
I also want to say one more thing. Sorry, this is something I can report on directly. I'm speaking from East Jerusalem, which is the Arab sector of Jerusalem. It's part of Israel. It was illegally annexed, and things have slightly clamped down here as well. There aren't checkpoints and things. It's considered a part of Israel, but there are significant, more. You can easily observe more soldiers who are roaming the old city, who are checking people's IDs. Their position at the entrances to Damascus gates, checking younger people for their IDs. So that's also happening as well. And this is in an Arab sector of Jerusalem.
When you first arrived in Israel on your trip, made headlines throughout Canada. It was national news. In the end, you were freed on bail, and a significant bail. That bail was paid for by Israeli peace activists who were supporting your visit to report on these types of events as they go down. So in that light, can you speak about the dynamics within Israel's society? We see a certain response waged by the current government. There's elections coming up. However, Israel's society is often painted in this black and white way in Western media, especially after these attacks. But perhaps can you speak about the diversity of response or ideas about this ongoing occupation and the types of events such as suicide bombings within Israel's society?
Well, there are dissenters in Israel like there are dissenters anywhere. But, you know, to be really clear, the consensus in Israel is complicit in the occupation. I don't think any Israeli can hide from that reality, that they are complicit in an illegal occupation of a people which subjects them to daily humiliation and daily indignities, and causes insecurity for Israelis as well. So that's clear. But of course, there is dissent. Up until the recent suicide attack, a lot of people felt that the impenetrable veneer of Ariel Sharon was being penetrated because of corruption scandals. But with the recent suicide attack, he can portray himself again as Mr. Security and use that to win the next election. But keep in mind that his main opponent is the Labor Party head, Amram Mitzna, and he is saying that Sharon should be tougher on the Palestinians. He does support a withdrawal of settlements from various areas of occupied Palestine, but he also supports the separation fence, the apartheid wall that's being built. So the consensus here, the mainstream consensus, is very much complicit in this illegal occupation, and there's no easy way around that. But there are dissenters, of course, peace activists, refuseniks, et cetera, who have a whole other vision of what being Jewish in Palestine means. And for them, it does not mean a colonial relationship with Palestinian people. Rather, it means a relationship based on true mutual respect and supporting the dignity of others. And, you know, I saw a small bit of that when I saw people come out and support me. I saw a lot more of that when people come out and supported protests in occupied Palestine. But I think more importantly, and this is something I got from people I talked to in Balata, Palestinian refugees in Balata, they really don't want Israelis, whether they're peace activists or not, in the occupied territories. They understand when you talk to them that, you know, there are good Israelis that are opposed to the occupation. But their point of view is that if you're opposed to the occupation, you should be fighting in Israel. Don't come here with your talk of peace. It's easy to talk about peace. You got to do peace. And that means fighting for social justice and resisting in Israel itself. And certainly when you talk to people in a place like Nablus, which is a center of resistance, places like Askar and Balata, they couldn't care less about the Israeli peace movement in Palestine. They're waiting for the day that the Israeli peace movement can cause a stir here in Israel itself. Not fake peace like Oslo, not fake peace like the peace of Ehud Barak or Yitzhak Rabin or even movements like Peace Now, but a real legitimate peace which supports the self-determination of the Palestinian people. And really, over the last few weeks, both being in Israel and in Palestine, I've learned that. While of course acknowledging that there are individuals and groups that are dissenting.
You've been listening to an interview with Jaggi Singh, a Montreal-based writer and activist who is on the ground in the occupied territories with the International Solidarity Movement, a network of people from throughout the world building towards a global movement led by Palestinians of nonviolent direct action against the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. To get more information about the International Solidarity Movement and getting involved, visit www.palsolidarity.org. To get up-to-date information and news about the Israeli occupation, visit www.palestine.indymedia.org. This report is being produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stefan Christophe.